everybody. Hello, as Jason said, I'm Katie, and it's really nice to see you all. It's grown over there. It's lovely. It's blossomed into... Hello. Nice to see you. So I'm going to be speaking tonight. We're going to be carrying on in our series in the Book of Mark. But before we do that, just as a little icebreaker, it's a little bit icy outside, so we'll have an icebreaker. I just want you to chat with the person next to you, just for a moment, about, or in the groups, about what are some of the questions that are kind of going on in your head at the moment. That sounds very broad. It's meant to be. So it can be anything. It could be big questions like, should I take this job? Should I go and live in this place? It could be even bigger questions like, what is the meaning of life? Or it could be questions like what is frequently in my head, which is, what am I having for tea? So whatever kind of questions are going around in your head, in your life at the moment, just chat about that for a moment in your groups. Okay. Cool. I wonder what you guys talked about. I'm just going to pick on a couple of people to just give me a question. So is this... I can't actually see. If I wave this in someone's face, will it... Hey, excellent. How about you guys? What kind of questions have you got?
We got to, what am I doing with the rest of my life?
Oh, a big one. A big start question. Okay, that's a huge question. How about... Has anybody got a little question?
I was quite thirsty and was thinking, where can I get some water?
Oh, you can get some water. And did you?
I did. I stole some
he
of yours.
He did. He stole some of mine. Any more questions? How about Adam and Rosie? What questions did you talk about?
How are we going to raise the money that we need to go to Ethiopia as a team?
Ooh, yeah. Nice. Very good. And how about Jack? How about you? Because you shaked your head at me.
I wasn't thinking about too much, really. Questions I was thinking about.
Were you thinking about how you could answer the question?
I was definitely
deep.
That.
That's meta. Well done. Great. Well, I hope you can see that, I mean, life is always full of questions, isn't it? And some of them are really huge, and some of them are really small. But often, I think as well, life is full of questions, but not often many answers. I don't know if you find that. You might get an answer to your question like Jason, or you might not. Like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life is quite difficult to see. Sometimes it feels like we just can't see clearly what is coming. And we've been looking, in the Book of Mark, we've been looking at Jesus and what kind of king he is. And in the passage that we're looking at today, actually, Jesus asks what I think is the biggest question of all. The question to end all questions, you might say. In fact, I would dare to suggest that having an answer to this question actually lays the foundation for every other question that you might have in life. So we're going to be looking at chapter 8, Mark chapter 8 today. So if you want to grab a Bible, there's some at the front here that you can grab or get out your device or whatever. We're looking at Mark chapter 8, and we're going to be taking the passage in chunks today. We're going from verse 22 to the end of the chapter, but we're just going to be doing it in chunks. So if you'd like to turn to Mark chapter 8, verse 22. Okay. So Jesus and his followers have been going around various places, doing various things. And we see in verse 22, they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home, saying, "Don't even go into the village." Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. So it's weird, isn't it, really? I mean, at first glance, these two stories seem quite unconnected. And the first episode, you have Jesus heals a blind man using spit. Spit. That is quite funny. That is quite gross. And I don't recommend that you try that at home. Jesus uses spit to heal this man. And then he also does it in two parts, which is very weird. He doesn't seem to do that anywhere else. I mean, is Jesus having an off day? Did it not go quite right? And you've got people that look like trees, and it's very weird. And that's the first story. And then you get the second story, where Jesus is having his conversation with his disciples, and he starts asking them, who do those people say I am? Who do you say I am? Is he having an identity crisis? Is he a bit insecure? Does he not know who he is? What is going on in these two stories? Well, the thing is, actually, both of them are about blindness. In the first, Jesus is dealing with physical blindness. So we talked about earlier on in our series about how Jesus is a healing king. He is in the business of healing people. He cares about our physical needs, and he has the power to bring healing. Jesus is the healing king. He has the power to make a blind man see. But he's also in the business of dealing with our much deeper, much more urgent need, one that we actually don't even often realize that we have, which is spiritual blindness. And that's what the second story is about. And the Bible talks a lot about spiritual blindness and darkness. It talks about how sin comes into the world and taints and twists everything. And it stops us from seeing how things really are. We are blinded to what is true and what is good. We are unable to see God and see who he truly is. And so we're unable to see who we truly are. And we end up in this mess of insecurity and anxiety and sin. And we get further and further away from God because we just can't see. And the thing is, the consequences of sin is death. So our blindness is a really serious problem. Now, just to illustrate this for us, I'm going to ask my lovely assistant, Jason, to come up. Nice. So have any of you heard of Google Cardboard? This is weird.
It's basically a virtual reality headset made of cardboard.
Yes, the future is here. The future is here, and it's made of cardboard, and it costs £2.50 off Amazon. This genuinely is a virtual reality headset, truly. It has two little lenses in it, and it's a cardboard box, and you whack your phone in it, which Jason is now going to do.
There we go. There might be a screenshot as well appearing, maybe. I'm going to get off the stage.
Okay, so Jason, tell me, what can you see?
Well, I was meant to be around Big Ben, but I think I've got a bit lost. Oh, construction site. There it is. Hello.
So you're looking at Big Ben now?
Yeah, it's quite tall. I'm quite kind of low down on it.
Interesting.
I might go down the road a bit.
What can you see to your left?
The London Eye. Genuinely.
The London Eye?
Yeah.
How's it doing?
It's stationary, I think.
What can you see to your right?
Turn around. There is some kind of construction barrier that's going on down there. And that's right below Big Ben, who I've now moved quite close next to.
And now, can you come towards me?
Yeah, you see, now that's quite hard. Can you keep talking?
Yeah, I'm right over here.
You're coming out the speakers.
Come on, look this way. I'm right over here. No, you're going the wrong way. Oh, you're almost going the right way.
Okay.
Wait, stop. Oh, you're going to walk into something. Oh, this is no good. Come on now.
Doesn't look like it.
Let's get these things off.
Oh, there's a nice Audi.
There we go.
I did not know there was here.
Yes, there you go. See, the problem is, he can't see. He can't see what's really going on. Do you want to say that back? He can't see where he really is. And how on earth is he supposed to make good decisions about how to not walk into somebody? Sorry about that. How is he supposed to make any kind of good decisions in his life if he can't see clearly where he is or what's going on? He needs to take off his headset. And you see, this is what we need somebody to do for us. We need someone to come and take off the headset, so to speak, to heal our spiritual blindness, to help us to see clearly. Lucy's having a go now. She's liking it. If anyone else wants to have a go, later, obviously, clearly not right now. But this is what Jesus is doing here with his disciples. He's helping them to see clearly. He's taking off the headset that stopped them from seeing things as they really are. He says to them, you know, who do other people say that I am? And then he hits them with this big question. You know, I said there was going to be a big question. Well, this is it. What about you? Who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? There's no getting away from it, is there? It cuts right to the heart. You can imagine them going, oh, wow. And today, he's asking you the same question. What about you? Who do you say I am? Now, Peter is the one who answers for the group. He would be. He says, you are the Messiah, here in verse 29. Now, what did Peter mean by that? Well, what he meant was the Messiah, the one who was going to come and save Israel, save the Jews from their oppressors, which was at that time the Romans, and set everything right, as prophesied in the Old Testament. They were expecting a new king, a king who was going to be like King David of Goliath fame, who was going to make Israel a great nation again. They were expecting a Messiah who would come in a blaze of glory and lead a revolution, lead an uprising. They were expecting, do you hear the people sing? They'd been longing for generations for this Messiah to appear. It wasn't a small thing for Peter to say, you are the Messiah. What he was saying was, all of our hopes and dreams are in you. So you see now why Jesus tells them to keep it quiet. He often does, doesn't he? When people figure out who he is, we've seen it earlier in Mark, he says, don't tell. Don't tell anybody yet. Because if people had, it would have started a revolution among the Jews. They would have been like, yeah, the time has come. Let's overthrow the Romans. The Messiah is here. But you see, that wasn't Jesus' intention. That was never his plan or his way. Because in fact, their picture of the Messiah was wrong. And he needed to correct it. So you see, this conversation that he has with his disciples is just like with the blind man, in that there's two stages to it. So where the blind man was completely blind, and then he was partially healed, so he could see a bit. He could see people, but they looked like trees. And then Jesus comes and completely heals him. Well, this is what he's actually doing with his followers. Peter recognizes that he's the Messiah. That's like the first step. Jesus, he receives that. You know, well done, I see your step of faith. That's good. But actually, what Peter is seeing when he says, you're the Messiah, is more like the trees moving around than seeing the people clearly. And so then Jesus says, okay, now let me cure you of your spiritual blindness and show you who I really am. Let me show you what it really means for me to be the Messiah. And so it says, going on from verse 31, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man, another Son of Man is another name for the Messiah that is found in the Old Testament, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. So he said, yes, he's identified himself. I am the Son of Man. I am that Messiah that you're waiting for. I am a king, but I am a king who is going to a cross. And just imagine for a minute how Peter felt when he heard that, how the others felt when he heard that. When Jesus was saying he was going to be rejected and killed, this one that they've put all their hopes in. They probably didn't even register that he also said he was going to rise again after 3 days. You can imagine them going, what? Jesus, you're going to die. That's not in the script. That's not supposed to happen. That is not what the Messiah is meant to do. And to make it even more shocking, it's not even like Jesus is talking as though he's had a premonition that everything's going to go wrong, that he's going to do his best, but actually it's going to go wrong. There's going to be a disaster. He's going to get killed. He's going to get rejected. No, Jesus is actually talking as though this is what he intends to happen. In fact, a couple of chapters later, in Mark 10, he says to the followers, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The Son of Man came to give his life. That's why he came. He didn't come in a blaze of glory and smash the Romans. He came because his people were blinded by sin and needed rescuing from death. They needed rescuing from a threat that was far greater than the Roman Empire. They needed rescuing from the sin and the darkness that had blinded them and kept them away from God. And he loves us And so he chose to come and rescue us from that. He was willing to pay the cost, which was that death that I talked about that was the consequences of sin. He said, I see that and I will take it because I want to heal you from your spiritual blindness. I want you to be in a relationship with me. So I will suffer death and rejection in order to do that. That is why he came. As he says in verse 31, the Son of Man must suffer. This Messiah, this Son of Man that the Jews had been waiting for, he didn't come to kill and conquer. He came to die. He came to die. And in doing so, to bring light and life to those trapped in darkness, which is us. So this is Jesus taking the headset off, helping them to see clearly what's really going on. And unsurprisingly, it's uncomfortable for them. I wonder if you've ever experienced this. Maybe you, like Peter, have had a great mountaintop experience where you've understood something of what Jesus is, but then actually you discover that it's quite different from what you thought, and you think, ooh, it's a bit like when you took the headset off, you're probably a bit like, ooh. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced that. And Peter is thoroughly unsettled by this. And it says here that he rebuked Jesus. He rebuked Jesus. When the same story is told in Matthew 16, it says that he took Jesus aside. And to be honest, it makes me cringe when I read it. I feel like someone needed to tap him on the shoulder and say, that's Jesus. He sounds like he wants to make him sit on the naughty step or something. And Jesus' response is pretty strong to this. You might even say harsh, but you see, Jesus knows, Jesus can see the full picture, and Jesus knows what is at stake here. And what is at stake here is your life, and my life, and the whole of creation. And so Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. And he's not saying there that Peter has been somehow possessed or anything, but Jesus, you see, he knows that he has an enemy. And that's Satan. And Satan will do anything to keep us in blindness, to keep us in darkness. So at this point, Satan is going to do anything he can to turn Jesus off his course, to put him off doing what he has come to do. And he tried to do it at the start of Jesus' ministry, when Jesus is in the wilderness, and Satan tries to tempt him to bypass the cross. You know, you don't need to go down that path. You can have all that glory and that victory here and now. You just need to bow to me. You don't need to go through the suffering first. He wants to put Jesus off his course. And you see here, he's using Peter's fears to do the same. Except that here, as well as then, Jesus strongly rejects it. He will not be turned from his course. That is not my way, he says. That is your way. I will conquer through patient suffering, not the violent seizing of power. Jesus knows what must be done, and he will not turn from it. So Jesus is opening their eyes. He's helping them to answer that question of who he really is. You say I'm the Messiah? Good. Let me show you what that really means. But you see, the question isn't just an abstract one. It's not just a sort of an exercise in how much can I understand who Jesus is? Can I get top marks by getting it right? And he's not actually even just asking them so that they're not surprised by what's to come. He's asking them because it's only by understanding what kind of king Jesus is and what kind of kingdom he has that they can understand what their own path is. It's only by answering the question of who he is that they can understand the questions about their own lives. So I'm just going to read on to the end of the chapter from verse 34. Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. Now this is quite radical stuff, really. I mean, it's quite easy just to sort of skim read it, but think about it. It's hugely radical. Take up your cross, deny yourself. Is Jesus actually asking his followers to die? Well, yes, actually he is. But understand, this is not the same death as Jesus. This is really important to understand. Now, Jesus died once and for all to deal with our sins and to make us right with God. And when he said, "It is finished," on the cross, it was. It was done. It was dealt with. So we do not need to die for our sins to make us right with God. Jesus has already done that. So what then does he mean when he talks about losing your life to save it and denying yourself, which sounds frankly quite odd and not very much fun? Well, the world tells me that my top priority is me. We have this fight or flight thing, don't we? Survival of the fittest. I have to do everything I can to preserve myself. Death of any kind is to be avoided at all costs. And hey, you only live once. So you need to make sure that one life that you have is good for you, is as good for you as it can possibly be. You need to put yourself first and your needs first, because after all, you just need to be happy. Just do what it takes for you to be happy. And that's the framework we use, isn't it, when we're looking at how to answer those questions of what shall I do with my life? What kind of job should I do? Well, what makes me happy? Except, of course, Jesus is the king of the upside-down kingdom. And he says exactly the opposite. He says that if you try to save your life by putting yourself first, then you'll lose it. You will throw it away on things that are only temporary. But if you choose to lay yourself down for the sake of others and for Jesus, you will find true life, eternal life in the future, and life to the full now. Because do you know what? You only live once is a lie. And this is something that the missionary Jim Elliot understood when he said famously, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And shortly after he said that, he was killed by the Ecuadorian tribesmen that he was trying to share the gospel with. So what does this dying to self actually look like? Well, for some of us, it might well mean a death like Jim Elliot's. In fact, for countless Christians around the world, it does. But for many of us, it won't. It will look like lots of little deaths where we choose to put others' needs before our own, where we choose to put aside selfishness and greed and pride and insecurity and unforgiveness and all those ways that we put ourselves first, when we choose to follow the example that our servant king, who came not to serve but to be served and to lay down his life for others, when we follow his example. And it is a constant daily choice. I have to choose every day to take myself off the throne and put God on it. What does that mean? Well, it means sometimes something as small as letting someone else have the remote when I want to watch Downton Abbey. It means talking to the person who's on their own when actually you'd rather be with your friends, because that's much, much easier, and you don't really want to talk to them because it makes you feel uncomfortable and awkward. It means being generous with my time and with my talents and with my money. It means being free with forgiveness, because that is dying to your right to be offended. And you know, the right to be offended is huge in our culture. We can be offended about all sorts of things, and we can air our views in all sorts of places. Well, part of dying to self is saying, I'm going to die to my right to be offended, and I'm going to let that go. It means being okay with rejection. Jesus talked about rejection, didn't he? That the Son of Man would be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. Now, those were the people that you really wanted to know. You know, you'd think that actually those were the people that Jesus would be most concerned to get on his side. But he's not worried about that. He's not worried about making everyone like him. And you know, it is hard and it's painful, but dying to self sometimes means being okay with being rejected because you follow Jesus. And that might be by the popular people at school. It might be by the students that think you're not a proper student if you don't live that particular lifestyle. It might be by your boss at work who thinks that you're not good at your job because you're not cutthroat enough. You might say, hang on a minute, God, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. And if I don't look out for myself, No one else will. But you see, part of following Jesus is trusting him to have our back. You see, he promises to take care of our needs. He says, your Father in heaven knows what you need before you even ask him. So seek first his kingdom, and all these things will be added unto you. You seek me and my kingdom. I'll take care of all this stuff because I know you need it. I know you need a home. I know you need food to eat. I know you need relationships with people. I'll take care of it. He will fight your corner. That's why this lifestyle is real freedom. You might have heard those things about dying to self and thought, yeah, but it just sounds a bit grim, doesn't it? But you see, if the God of the universe, who has all the resources in the universe at his command, is going to look out for you, and the God of the universe, who also knows everything about you to the tiniest detail and always has, and has your best interests at heart and loves you, if he's in your corner, can there be greater freedom? Can there be a more fulfilling and rich and joyful life? I haven't experienced one. Because he is on our side, we are truly free to put others first, to die to ourselves. He set us free from darkness. He set us free from sin. And he set us free to live all out for Jesus and for others. And it really is freedom. And you know, it gets better as well, because it's not just free life now. It's hope for the future. Because in Jesus' upside down kingdom, death is not the end of life. It's the beginning. So we know, don't we, that 3 days after his death on the cross, Jesus rose again. He talks about it here in verse 31, even as he says what he's going to suffer. He says, I will rise again after 3 days. And the hope of Christianity is that one day we will share in that resurrection. We will all die eventually someday. But if we follow Jesus, then we will be raised in new bodies to new life, where there is no more death, no more pain, no more tears, no more blindness, either spiritual or physical. He's going to make everything new, and we get to be part of it. So for the Christian, because of the cross and because of the resurrection, we don't need to fear death in any of its forms, including all those little deaths that we die, even as we live, including all those self-denials. Because we know the answer to that question. We know who Jesus is. We know that he is our unexpected king who came in humility and suffering and who defeated death. We know what our hope is, bodily resurrection and eternal life with him. So we don't need to strive to save our lives. We can lay them down without fear, knowing that that's how we will truly live. So that is why I believe that Jesus' question to his disciples in this passage is the most important question that you will ever be asked and ever answer. Because I think if we get that right, everything else falls into place. There's a wonderful verse which I love in Romans 12 that says, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. And that sounds like a good place to be. So I'm going to ask you today, what about you? Who do you say he is? Just imagine for a moment Jesus saying those words to you. Who do you say I am? So maybe you've got a vague picture of who Jesus is, but it kind of looks a bit more like trees, and you need him to sharpen that picture for you. Or maybe actually you're completely blind and you feel like you've actually still got this headset on, and actually you think you're still in London looking at Big Ben. Well, tonight is an opportunity for you to ask him to help you to see. Or maybe actually you see clearly, but you need God's help to live that life of dying to self. And in fact, we all need God's help to live that life of dying to self. I can't do it by myself. I need God's help to do that. So we're just going to spend some time now in worship. The band is going to play this song, Open the Eyes of My Heart. And They're going to play it. You can sing. You can just listen. But as they play this song, use this opportunity to allow our unexpected king to speak to you. Think about how you answer that question. Who do you say he is? And what would you like him to do for you today? As we sing, Open the Eyes of My Heart, are you asking him to open them for the first time? Show me who you are, Jesus. Or are you asking him to give you a clearer picture? Jesus, I want to go deeper with you. Or are you asking him to help you to live the life that he's called you into, that life of freedom? So let's just spend this time just between you and Jesus and make this your prayer. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you, to see who you are, who you really are.